burglary and it all took place in the same house in the same incident, you mean that these would not be joint?
As I understood the amendment requested by the committee, it was more restrictive than that.
What is the present scope of proper joint charging? Is it a transactional test?
I don't have that statute right in front of me, Chairman.
What was the question?
I wanted to clarify what the present restrictions on joint charging were.
Regarding to regarding the indictment provides that when there are several charges against any person or persons on the same act or transaction, instead of having several indictments, it can all be joined into one indictment. That's a section that is amended.
Here, yeah, okay.
Dash two. Then.
I frankly have no independent recollection right now of the subcommittee's adoption of that amendment, but I think that's correct. Let's do this. Mr. Gruber, I wonder if you could, before I determine that we can't act one way or the other on the bill today, I'd like to see if you could examine the proposed amendments a bit further in the next few minutes and see if there's a way that you think you could comfortably further amend those to implement that action that's been described at the subcommittee.
Try to do that. What's rattling around in my mind here is that it's going to splinter your two concepts of when you have presumption that there will be a joint trial, as opposed to when you don't have presumption, but you may. It's going to splinter that into two separate concepts. You may have to have substantial new language.
The restriction originated in a proposed amendment of the Metropolitan Public Defender. Linda reminds me, which read, when two or more defendants are jointly charged with the same crime or crimes, the state may move the court for a joint trial. Now, they were approaching it from the standpoint of when a joint trial would be available as the exception. We took that principle and sought to build it into establishing when joint trials would be the rule subject to exception under certain conditions. But the point is that that's the language that expressed the concept which was adopted.
All right, let me look at this then by now.
Thank you. $24.49.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill was sent to the full committee. Due pass is amended. and from Subcommittee One, it was, the bill was originally requested by Marion County Board of Commissioners. It was supported by Metropolitan Public Defender and by ODAA with a change that was proposed by the Public Defender and was adopted in concept by the full committee. The amendments to the bill are in Legislative Council Amendments, House Bill 2449-1, dated 4783. You all should have received copies, but I have extras if you don't have a copy. This bill is amended, amends the statute relating to arraignment at which the court reads the accused or instrument to the defendant and causes a copy to be delivered to the defendant. Under existing law, when the accusatory instrument charges a misdemeanor, the defendant is not required to appear personally and may appear by counsel. In felony cases, under existing law, the defendant is required to be personally present. What the bill as amended does is to provide that for purposes of arraignment, an appearance in person, whether optional or required, may be by a simultaneous TV transmission, allowing the defendant and the court to observe and communicate with each other simultaneously. The amendments that were added to that concept were that provision must be made in the system to allow the defendant to communicate privately with their counsel. And this does not require that anybody provide this sort of a TV arrangement, but it makes it optional for those who have that capacity or want to explore that capacity. There was some discussion of the possibility of expanding this to other proceedings, and I did talk, I've talked to Legislative Council some about it, and also to Jim Hennings, who was supporting this proposal and had suggested a possible expansion, but he spoke further with some criminal defense lawyers, all of whom get a little bit nervous about expanding into other areas because of the Oregon constitutional provision that is broader than, or more specific than, the U.S. Constitution, in that it, Article 1, Section 11 provides a right in all criminal prosecution for the accused to meet face-to-face, meet their witnesses face-to-face. And so he was hesitant to suggest going further with that. And I think it seemed like other parties that I talked to, I believe I talked to Mr. Van Dyke, the district attorneys, about it too. And it seemed like those who had been interested in it were comfortable with trying it at this arraignment stage, at least at this point.
Move House Bill 2449 as amended to forward due pass recommendation.
Senator McCartney moves that House Bill 2449 as amended be reported with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Call the roll.
Representative Corden?
Yeah. Yes.
Hill?
Aye.
Yeah. Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Scobar?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Chairman Myers?
Representative, excused. Aye. Okay. 2534.
Mr. Chair, I'm distributing some testimony that was left at my desk that is testimony in support of House Bill 2449 from David Burke, Sheriff of Lane County. May I also at this time, there is this pile of things at my desk here. This is a testimony from OCDLA on five of the, in opposition to five of the bills that are before us today. Some of which we might have already done.
Which five?
Which Mr. Chair and committee members, House Bill 2534 was sent to the full committee with amendments adopted by Subcommittee 1, and those were put into a hand-engrossed version that was distributed to the members of Subcommittee 2 that were not present at the hearing. This bill involves civil compromise, and the amendments really delete what the bill originally was doing and substitute a different approach. Under existing case law, if a victim acknowledges that the victim has received payment of an amount, for example, that was stolen, existing law says that the court has discretion to compromise, even if the victim doesn't agree. Some of this issue came up in a DuMont case where the court said that they didn't think that the legislature had meant to leave the compromise to the whim or caprice of the victim, or would have made consent of the victim a condition precedent for the judge to compromise the case. As amended, this bill would provide that where the defendant, the question that came up is really surrounded what it meant for the person to acknowledge receipt of satisfaction for the injury. Did it mean that they got paid off the money that they had lost or whatever, or did it mean that they not only got paid off the money, but they were agreeing that the person not be prosecuted? As amended, the bill would provide that where the defendant has paid the victim, but the victim and the district attorney still want to prosecute the case, the judge would not have the discretion to dismiss it. It would put it into the district attorney's hands. In effect, it would make victim's consent a condition precedent to the judge's dismissing the case. So that if the defendant has paid the victim still wants to prosecute, then the decision whether to proceed with the prosecution will be left to the district attorney. If the victim has been paid and says that they're satisfied and do not want the defendant prosecuted, then it's left up to the court. If the district attorney still wants to prosecute, the judge still would have discretion at that point in whether to dismiss the case or not.
Questions? Is there a motion on the bill?
Move to the floor. Do pass recommendation.
Senator Courtney moves House Bill 2534 as amended be reported with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion?
No.
Hold on.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Hill?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Avera?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Chairman Myers?
Aye. 2893.
Chair and committee members, House Bill 2893 was amended by Subcommittee 1. As noted in a copy that was sent to your offices, but it was a small amendment that is on page 1, line 15. Person or property were deleted. It's the boldface language on line 15. This is a bill that comes from at the request of the governor and the governor's commission against violent crime. It gives the same authority for seeking wiretaps to attorney generals that district attorneys now have. That's one effect of it. The other effect of it is to expand the types of crimes for which interception of wire or oral communications can be obtained. Right now, it's limited to a demonstration that there's reasonable grounds to believe the individual is committing, has committed, or is about to commit a particular felony of murder, kidnapping, arson, robbery, bribery, extortion, or other crime dangerous to life and punishable as a felony or a conspiracy of for such. This would expand that list of crimes to include gambling and violations of any offenses having to do with controlled substances.
As noted, the subcommittee felt that the remaining language in line 15, which was deleted, was far too much of an open-ended expansion of the authorized scope of wiretapping, apart from the question of whether the Attorney General should be involved or not. And those two issues were treated separately in the subcommittee. Addition of the Attorney General and then the scope, in any event, of the offenses for which wiretaps could be sought by whomever was authorized under the Act to seek taps. Is there a motion on the bill with the issue before us?
Move it to forward the due pass recommendation as amended.
Representative Lombard moves House Bill 2893 as amended be reported with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
I have a couple of questions just as I'm reading through.
Representative Scavero.
Might ask counsel, on line 13, are misdemeanor gambling offenses covered under this? And on line 14, are misdemeanor controlled substance offenses covered under this? Where it says on line 13, the particular felony of murder, kidnapping, gambling. I don't know if it means particular felony of gambling or not. I don't want my grandmother plays bingo sometimes, and I don't want her wires tapped, you know, if she hits it big or something.
She what?
We're going to take care of that bingo subcommittee, aren't we?
Yeah, it's set down in bingo subcommittee.
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that. I'm trying to think if there are misdemeanor levels of any of those other offenses that are listed, which I'm checking out, or else we can ask whether someone in the audience from the district attorney office might be more familiar with this, perhaps.
Mr. Chairman, what is a particular felony modify? Is it everything in that line there, or is it just murder? I wasn't aware of any misdemeanor murder cases.
I can't speak for the rest of the subcommittee. I think my assumption, I don't think we addressed the issue specifically. My assumption, I think, was that we were talking about felonies across the board here. Would the department care to, someone on behalf of the Violent Crime Commission care to comment as to whether a different intention was being advanced in this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Robert Barton, Assistant Attorney General, Department of Justice. I think not only is it the intent, as I can see, of the drafters, that it be felonies, but looking at the way the verbiage is in the existing statute, I think the modifier felony in that phrase, a particular felony, is meant to modify every one of the crimes. It wouldn't actually make any sense to have that language before the crime of murder per se and not modify the existing crime. So it would be our intent that it would be felonies only that this pertained to.
So far as gambling is concerned, I think that's a very defensible interpretation. However, when you turn to the remaining language, a violation of any offense related to controlled substances, do you go on then and say, and punishable as a felony? Is that intended to modify in lines 15, or is that modify only other crime dangerous to life?
I can see where that language could have some ambiguity to it, perhaps even a violation of any felony offense pertaining to controlled substances. The insertion of the word felony just between those words, any, an offense on line 14 might clarify that. I do think on the previous line, the word felony is fairly clear that it would apply to each of the crimes that follow on line 13, but to clarify even further on line 14, perhaps addition of the word felony between any and offense on 14 would remove any doubt whatsoever.
Well, I think we could maybe strike a violation of any. We go back and say that an individual is committed, has committed, or is about to commit a particular felony of murder, kidnapping, gambling, arson, robbery, bribery, extortion.
Or any offense pertaining to controlled substances. That still might...
No, I was going to say, either we'd say a felony pertaining to controlled substances, or I don't know if we could simply strike all of that and just say extortion, comma, controlled substances, whether that would be quite right or not.
Well, I think the difference is extortion, in a way, is one separate crime, whereas controlled substances, I think, is meant to include delivery, possession, and other crimes. It might be better to do what the chairman just suggested, that is, a violation of any felony pertaining to controlled substances. I think some inclusion of the word felony there would probably be advisable, just to...
How about just saying after extortion, striking a violation of, and saying any felony
offense
pertaining to controlled substances?
I would think that would be very clear.
Chair moves that in line 14, we delete the words a violation of, and then delete the word offense and substitute felony. And I'm going to make one other motion as part of that. After the word substances, I would move that we insert a comma so that we then go on to read, or other crime dangerous to life, delete that comma after life, and punishable as a felony. Okay, so in line 14, strike a violation of, and strike offense and insert felony. After substances, insert a comma. In line 15, delete the comma after life. I think that should be quite clear now. We're talking only about felonies within the otherwise committed state. Linda, do you have any problem with that?
No, I think
you look like you were. You have a question? Is there a discussion of the amendment? Is there any objection? Adopted. Thank you, Representative Scavone, for raising that clarification. Further discussion of the bill as amended? We have a motion on this bill pending?
Yeah.
We do. Representative Lombard's motion is pending. Is there further discussion of Representative Lombard's motion? Call roll.
Yes.
Hill.
Aye.
Lombard.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Springer.
No. Rutherford.
Aye.
Chairman Miller.
Aye.
2389. Want a motion on this? I'm on the table. 2389.
Representative Courtney moves to table House Bill 2389. Call the roll.
Yes.
Hill.
Aye.
Lombard.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Rivera.
Aye.
Springer.
Aye.
Rutherford.
Aye.
Chairman
Meyer. Aye.
Table. 2492. Tell you what, Linda, this may take a minute or two also. Let's skip quickly to Senate Bill 113. I think we can dispose of that. We'll have left three bills that I think we'll take a little more time to work through the election amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chair, committee members, Senate Bill 113 3 is recommended do pass to the full committee from Subcommittee 1. It is requested by the governor and was presented as basically a housekeeping bill and an improvement in the efficient operations of the governor's office and to repeal an obsolete statute. For one thing, it allows the governor's extradition functions, either allowing them to ask someone to be extradited here, responding to a request for extradition from the governor of another state, to be delegated to another person in the governor's office, either to legal staff or another assistant to the governor. It specifies, I'm sorry, that's to the legal staff. It specifies that substitute service of a subpoena can be made when a party is trying to call the governor as a witness, that some people, that was based on the fact that some had tried to follow the very letter of the law requiring that personal service be fulfilled, and the intent here is to allow substitute service on the governor's legal counsel or other assistant. And the final change is an elimination and repeal of a statute that provides for the position of secretary to the governor, which position has been vacant for about 31 years, according to the governor's representatives.
Questions? Chair, Representative Courtney moves Senate Bill 113, be reported with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Call the roll.
Yes.
Bill.
Aye.
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 Okay, now we'll come back to 2492.
Mr. Chair and committee members, you should all have copies of Legislative Council Amendments, House Bill 2492-1, dated April 6, 1983. If anybody needs extra copies, let me know. This bill was sent... This was sent due pass as amended to the full committee by Subcommittee 1. At Subcommittee 1's meeting, Shirley Davidson in the Executive Department proposed a substitute measure to the printed bill in order to incorporate the federal system that is being established, that is established for missing persons and being established for unidentified dead. The Subcommittee adopted Mr. Davidson's amendments as a substitute for the bill, allowing for form and style necessary clarifying language by Legislative Council. It also adopted an amendment conceptually to limit the information that could be collected from doctors, optometrists, and so forth, to information that would be useful in identifying missing persons. I think there was some confusion regarding interchanging the information that's helpful to identifying missing people versus dead bodies. There was concern with the information sought from doctors if it was to be aimed at helping locate missing persons might include information that might be sought from, for example, a psychiatrist or such, whereas the information that was basically discussed as being needed in the hearing was the information that was limited to things like broken bones, surgical scars, missing organs, and things like that that would help identify a body, in fact, and that is where the emphasis is and what the amendments are, the limitations of the kind of information being sought is directed in that manner. The purpose of the amendments is to work our system into the National Unidentified Dead and Missing Persons Program. Section 1 directs the state police to consult with the state medical examiner and establish a file of records relating to unidentified human remains. In addition to any other file that the state police maintain, they're to put unidentified dead information into the federal system. Section 2 directs the state medical examiner to turn over information in their records to the state police for any remains that they can't identify within 30 days. Section 3 provides when a person is reported missing, the police agency is to enter a missing persons report into state and federal records within 48 hours. The police give the person a form to fill out, which would be prescribed by the executive department for collecting medical, dental, and other physically descriptive information that is likely to be useful in identifying remains of the missing person, and request that person to provide the data to the police, or the police can request the information directly from the dentist, denturist, optometrist, physician, etc., such information as is likely to be helpful in identifying human remains of the missing person. That information would be entered into a state and federal records. Section 4 requires that the dentist, doctor, etc., upon receipt of a written request from a parent, spouse, guardian, or police agency,